That little blot on the sun we were talking about earlier this hour asks a question. How is that little planet not falling into the sun? How is the sun's massive energy not obliterating little Mercury? There is a deeper question. How are we able to understand what is happening on Mercury and the sun and theorize about many more things? How can we come close to dominating the resources on Earth, enslaving the planetary systems to human demands, even to the point where we know we've gone too far? How can we hold an apparently unlimited capacity to comprehend the universe and events that stretch back in time billions of years, but find our lifespans limited? Physicist Sean Carroll asked himself some of these questions as a college student while listening to this Emerson, Lake & Palmer tune a long time ago. His new book takes a real good stab at answering them. Sean Carroll is a theoretical physicist at the California Institute of Technology, author of The Big Picture on the Origins of Life, Meaning, and the Universe Itself. Welcome to The Takeaway.
Thanks for having me, John.
This is a spectacularly ambitious book. Let me just say that right off the top. Do you believe that all of scientific thought, and that's sort of the impression you get from this book, is converging to some sort of unifying understanding of consciousness, the meaning of life, and what the universe is all about?
You know, it's always difficult to predict when things will happen, but I do think that what we have is sort of the background in which those questions are going to be addressed. Yes, I think that, you know, there is one universe. It sort of fits together. We talk about it in different ways. And there are many, many, many questions within that that we don't know the answer to, but they're not going to overthrow the basic picture.
And is this a matter of dotting I's and T's, or is this an exciting moment that we're really on the edge of here as a scientist?
Well, I think it's an exciting moment. We might not be on the edge of it. It's an exciting time that we sort of have put together this basic framework of a natural world that evolves according to certain rules. But who knows how long it will take to actually do this? I would not call it dotting it I's. I would not refer to it that way. It's really like there's a project. We've seen the map. We've started on this journey.
Consciousness is complexity. Why would the Big Bang create the conditions for blobs of complexity called consciousness in places like Earth?
Well, it's a great question. I think it's sort of one of the big questions that we have only just begun to grapple with scientifically. We have this wonderful story of entropy increasing. The entropy of the universe is just the disorderliness of it. And the universe started very low entropy and organized, and it's gradually winding down and becoming more and more disorderly. That makes sense, but then why do complex structures come into being? What we're glimpsing right now is the fact that in order to have complex structures exist, appear, and then sustain themselves, you need that increase of entropy. It's not just that we human beings are permitted by the laws of physics and permitted by the second law of thermodynamics that says the universe is getting more disorderly. It's really that we rely on that just to be here.
And so life and our lifespans, as you describe them, become like an ignition event, that something happens and the circumstances of biology and neuroscience and information science ignite what we call consciousness in our brains and then creates this civilization and we exist for a time and then poof, it goes away, kind of like the sun will eventually burn itself out. So that's why our lifespans are limited?
Yeah, you know, in some cosmic sense, our lifespans are limited because the universe will just wind down all the way. Now, to be honest, there's a much more immediate reason why our lifespans are limited. Biology did not tune us to try to live all that long. Mammals tend to have around 1.5 billion heartbeats for their lifespans. We humans, because we have good medicine, we get about 3 billion heartbeats on average. And that, honestly, that's not that much, right? 3 billion is not such a big number. Although biology, you know, is progressing very, very fast. They could fix that. There's no law of physics that says we couldn't have lifespans measured in the thousands or millions of years.
Does the universe want to create entities that can understand it? Or is consciousness some accident that we happen to be experiencing?
Well, the universe doesn't have wants, we don't think. We don't think that's the appropriate vocabulary to use. It is a natural outcome of the evolution of the universe from the very orderly Big Bang to today that such complex self-referential creatures such as ourselves came into being.
It's so inevitable? Consciousness is inevitable?
I don't know if it's inevitable, yeah. But it's not really an accident either. It's sort of it's in between. It's the kind of thing that you wouldn't be surprised to see, but it's not inevitable. Well, at least to the current understanding that we have, we don't think it's inevitable.
Is life different than information, or is information a kind of mapping of what we think of life? You know, some people say that we are nothing but information, but, you know, I can cut myself and bleed here.
That's right. I think we're not – it's not accurate to say we're nothing but information. Information is all over physics, so even when life is not involved, information is crucially important. I think that we don't have a great definition of what counts as life or not, but one of the most crucial ingredients is that living things – change over time, right? Something that is absolutely static and unchanging might have information in it, but you wouldn't call it alive. So there's something special about how we evolve through time and respond to the outside world that makes us alive.
You say that quantum states are a key to understanding the ways in which consciousness is both complex but also very organic, and that humans can be both, you know, kind of crazily unpredictable and also ploddingly conformist.
Yeah, well, quantum mechanics is the way the world works. So again, in some trivial sense, everything is due to quantum mechanics. But there's an interesting question about how much the differences between quantum reality and our old-fashioned classical notions of the world are really crucial to understanding life and thinking and so forth. That's another one of these great unanswered open questions that we're just beginning to poke at right now.
Your book, On the Origins of Life, Meaning and the Universe Itself, the big picture is the original title. The Origins of Life gets fairly close to the Darwin's
That's right.
book. I mean, are scientists generally at Caltech and MIT and in the biological sciences interested in the same things, or are we still in the specialized silos of the late 20th century?
There's a lot of silos, and that's the comfortable place to live. But some of the most exciting and interesting places to live are the bridges between the silos that we're trying to build. You know, I'm a theoretical physicist, but some of my work on entropy and evolution and fluctuations is now rubbing right up against the origin of life and metabolism and the continuance of life through the ecosystem. So the silos that we build are human constructions. Nature is just out there waiting to be talked about.
Was there any sort of assistance to your consciousness when you stumbled on these questions listening to Emerson, Lake, and Palmer?
You never know. Like, as I say very clearly in the book, physics is a great thing to study because it's the simplest science. Physics really takes the universe apart and looks at its simplest, tiniest constituents. When you get to biology, consciousness, the social sciences, oh my goodness, that is so much more complicated. So I wouldn't claim to know what stimulated which part of my brain while I was writing the book.
But you weren't helping it with Annie Greensprings?
I was not helping it other than coffee. There's really
coffee,
nothing.
That's right. You were a conservative scientist there at Caltech. Well, you can't function at Caltech unless you got all your faculties.
There's a old joke that says that a mathematician is a machine for turning coffee into theorems.
Sean Carroll is a theoretical physicist at the California Institute of Technology, author of The Big Picture on the Origins of Life, Meaning, and the Universe Itself, out on May 10th. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much.